meeting. We have quite a few apologies that we already dealt with earlier. We also want to welcome the DOC, Team DOC. I'm not sure who else is here, but Dr. Bisa is here. The PG will join us. They are still rounding up their methods with the local government. We'll start with the presentation, so I'm sure as we start the engagement, she will be here. I don't know who's going to do the introductions to Team DOC. Let's give it to Dr. Bisa to just give us a gist of what we will be dealing with today. Our invitation is to deal with the policy director and the report of the local loop.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members and members of the media. We will be presenting on the local loop and boundary project as well as the policy direction. The DG will join us. Just had a meeting with the local government portfolio committee discussing information society issues, the National Commission on Information Society and its program. So we decided that we continue with the presentation, and hopefully the DG will join us because we were there. So we will start with the local loop on bundling project and then the policy direction. Thank you.
Good morning, members and the chair, and we take this opportunity to take members from the presentation of the local banking report, which was completed on the 24th of May this year. So the copies are too busy printing them in the office, will come to continue the presentation. In the agenda, we've got the introduction, we've got the local loop definition, we've got the local loop and banding process, and the achievements and the recommendations in terms of the report. The LLU report that is being published by the department at the moment is emanating from the Minister of Speech, Budget Speech of 2006. Where she announced the local loop work committee to be led by Professor Marola to make a recommendation on how the Telkom Slack Mile network should be unbundled. The committee started the work probably 6 months after, 5 months after their announcement. So it took them almost plus minus 8 months to complete the work. We had about 9 members of the committee. And they were all from various backgrounds. We had members of the committee coming from legal backgrounds, financial and technical and so on. And the members of the committee, they all occupied positions in their own field of work. So they were not necessarily sitting on the committee full time. The report was finalized and was presented to the minister on the 25th. That was the day after the budget speech of the minister of 2007. There is a definition of a local loop, which is basically more technical by nature, but people feel more interested in the other definitions that are in the dictionary. They can still come up with their own definition, but the definition that we use here is the one that is applied throughout the report in terms of the members of the report. That is a portion of the telecommunications network that is situated between the subscriber, the end user, telephone connection, and the MDF, which is the main distribution frame. We've got diagrams as we continue the presentation. And it connects the telephone exchange of between the end user and the main telecom office. The physical wires that are connecting the customers and telecom are the ones that are usually referred to as the local loop. And this is the grammatical diagram of the local loop. Where you see the receivers, the presses, the laptop, is where the end user will be sitting. And we've got the blue line that separates the local loop, that is the last mile. If you see it, I get a drawing up there, the quotient that is referred to as the last mile. And then the other left part of the blue line, the customer community treatment. So the right is the local loop and the left is the community treatment for the customer. So the focus here mainly is on the MDF, which is the distribution framework, which all the equipment are connected to the end user. If members want some clarification, they'll set up to discuss other things. And then what is the local loop unbundling? Local loop unbundling is a process of allowing multiple local and national telecommunications operators to make use of connections from the telephone exchange central office to the customer premises. The definition that we have used there is also a definition that is applicable throughout the entire network. Although other dictionaries will still have ways of pushing the process, but what we all agree that is a process of ensuring that all other operators that allow for their needs, that being able to connect to the telephone exchange central office to the customer team, of which is not necessarily the case in South Africa. It is a process that covers a set of regulatory offers that is aimed at fairly providing newly entrenched operators with access to the local loop in a very competitive environment. Although it's not necessarily that it should be in a competitive environment, but that's the objective of local loop and banking process. Because other members can argue that we don't have a competitive environment at the moment, but the intention and the objective to unbundle is to bring the competitive environment to the sector. What does the unbundling of the local loop achieve in most cases? It's not one. There are various aspects that are being achieved by unbundling the local loop of the incumbents in the world, not necessarily in South Africa. It sometimes lowers the prices that are paid by the customer to access the services. It can increase the quantity and quality of services, increase the number of available business opportunities, more especially if we abandon the local loop in an environment where there's liberalization, because other role players, not necessarily to operate in the sector. Local loop and value can also improve innovation, because other operators then they have to come up with their own ways on how they should interconnect or connect to the MDF, not necessarily using the existing equipment by the operator of the incumbent. The proposal can provide affordable access to national telecommunication infrastructure, especially for the growth and participation of other operators in the economy. This is the achievement. The drawing just shows the achievement that can be done after the implementation of the local local banding from the customer's perspective, not from the operator's perspective. We've got the two blue lines there again. After the customer process equipment, we've got the local loop, we've got the ESAP, which is broadband high frequency. Those achievements that are mainly based on the kind of services that will be provided by the other operators that will access or will have access to the local loop. They'll be providing various services, either the better services, depending on the needs of those operators. Because local loop success is also depending on the needs of the service provider, what kind of services they need to get from the incumbent. The basic voice, so that there are various choices that can be made by the customer, unlike in the current situation. And then we also have the blue line, the second blue line, which shows the carrier selection, supposed to be carrier selection. As we read the report in the recommendation, there's also a requirement from the recommendation that pre-selection should be implemented as soon as possible to allow the customers to have more choices as the local loop and bundling process is being implemented by the regulator. The local loop topologies, the kind of local loop that exists, because local loop can be unbundled in various technical aspects. We've got the full unbundling, we've got the line sharing, we've got the deep stream access, and then we've got the sub-group unbundling. So we'll go to each topology and present each diagram. This is the full unbundling. When we are talking about the full unbundling of the local loop, it's where the entire copper of the incumbent is assigned to be leased by the other operator. So you look at the diagram, so we've got customer premises equipment, and then we've got the modem, which is the speaker. We've got the MVM, the distribution framework, where other operators, new entrants, and the incumbents, they connect to get access to the end users. That is the full unbundling. And then the line sharing methodology. This takes place when incumbent can't use of the local loop for the baseline. Not necessarily allowing all the new entrants to have access to the MDF. So we have the MDF, which is between the DSL model speaker and the speaker. And after the MDF, we've got the speaker. The speaker then splits the incumbent and the new entrant. So the new entrant doesn't necessarily have access directly to the MDF. That is like sharing. And then the new entrant, in the same copper wire, you can have the new cell and telecom providing two different services. Can have Neotel providing data services and telecom providing voice on the same copper wire. Therefore, the end user will be able to choose from the same line that comes to the house, whether Neotel will provide the broadband and telecom will provide voice, not necessarily getting the wire, two wires coming to the house. That is line sharing. It's also referred to as the one that is more affordable for the new entrants. Because they don't have to bring their own equipment. And then we've got the deep stream access, the incumbents are supposed to provide their own data service for the ISP. It's actually referred to as the technology that is more appropriate for the ISP. Because it automatically sets the process for any new to roll out the broadband network. There are many countries that doesn't use it as a technology on its own. It needs these other technologies. Although my media are using this stream only in their local loop. In the report you see the various case studies that we have from different countries. And in the report you see this country is this topology. And I think that will be helpful. This is the room of the technical room for the DC. So we've got the MDF, and then we've got the speaker, we've got the incumbent taking the router, and the incumbent taking the speaker. And then from the router, then we've got the router to the ISP, just for them to be able to provide the broadband over the network of the incumbent. And this other services that bundles with the victim, but more necessarily to deal with the issues of broadband, the co-location, the victim itself co-location. And besides co-location, the ISPs will have access at the point of interconnection outside the incumbent premises. And then at the sale of local traffic services, they will have access whereby incumbent services to new entrants and the wholesale price for the new entrants to receive at their own retail prices. But that's the packages of the different tribulations. Issues for implementation. We haven't discussed stop loops in the report. We only define what stop loops are. Because it's one topology of local loop unbundling that hasn't been implemented in various countries, so it was very difficult for the committee members to make a lot of recommendations with regard to subgroups. The activity that the most expensive methods that can be implemented. So they actually just include methodologies that they see more appropriate for a capacity environment. Issues for instrumentation. Currently, Telkom South Africa is the only incumbent, and there are three issues that need to be considered with respect to Telkom in the structure for the benefits of the LED process. So these are the issues that the regulator would need to look into, not necessarily to implement them as they are in the recommendation. But the issues are based on the other countries' experience, that Telkom is kept away from the local loop and dumping process, or we leave the local loop with Telkom and we regulate its usage. Or Telkom share the local loop with other players. Let's just go back to the issues of implementation. The issues of implementation were based on the various problems and successes in other countries. What succeeded and what didn't succeed. But looking at the behavior of the incumbents in those countries. In other countries, it was successful to keep the incumbent away from the process, and the regulator deals with the process on its own without involving the incumbent, just to issue the guidelines and the regulations and say this is what the incumbent should do, not necessarily engaging with them. And what succeeded in other countries was that Telkom then can be left with the do the local loop, and the regulator come up with the regulation to regulate how it should be used by other, or how it should be accessed by the other operators. And the last one, Telkom share the local loop with others, but also under the supervision of the regulator. Look at the foreign experience again, continuing from the previous slides on how the incumbent attitudes are being observed when the local loop is being abandoned. So we all know the attitudes that will be experienced during this process in Unicom, but I think it was Denmark and Sweden, the process was delayed for another 4 years because the incumbent took the regulator to court, and in the case of Telkom for 4 years. So it's something that as we finalize or we finalize the implementation of the process, we bear in mind and we have necessary strategies on how to implement and avoid other unnecessary litigation. So these are just the foreign students with regard to the implementation of the local group and banking process. What are the strategic issues that need to be taken into consideration according to the report? Where the incumbent has declared ADSL services for the residential and business customers, then the regulator has to come up with the regulations to say how other operators of the new entrants access those customers that already exist and they are owned by the incumbent. And the second thing, the new entrant can install cables or that to an exchange building, but of course with the proper guidelines and regulations, it has to be in place before the implementation phase. And the new entrant is given the right to obtain the information on where to place cables and that, because if they don't have right to obtain that information, they won't be able to know where to put their own cables and that. So they'll do that out of lack of knowledge, and if you don't achieve the objective of access. Because the most important thing in the local loop process is also to access the customer. So this the local advising process is properly regulated, but the new incumbent, they can still not access the customer that are owned currently by the incumbent. We'll still have the high cost of telecommunications with regard to access and services. All lines must be made available for using to all new entrants, which means that the guidelines and regulations have to be published before the implementation to ensure that the new entrants have got access to those lines and they meet technical specifications that are published by the regulator. And charges for subscriber lines are also published by the customer. There are quite many strategic issues that need to be developed before the implementation process. The other one is to make sure that the provision of this can be restricted or interrupted for safety or public order purposes. As we read through the other countries' case studies, when the local loop and learning process was implemented, there was a lot of interrupted services because then the incumbent tends not to take care of the existing infrastructure and the services collection. So we need to ensure that before implementation there are also those safeguarding regulations in place. There must be a minimum period of notice for technical changes terminating contracts to other operators and users. If the local loop and learning process is implemented and there are no proper guidelines on the technical notices that should be put by other operators, like the experience we have with regard to number possibility now, how long should it take for people to call their numbers to the harbor operator? We need to have those kinds of regulations and guidelines in place for the implementation to ensure that the new entrance requests are not put on hold for a long time deliberately by the incumbent. And the areas of controversy that have been identified is the prime practice for residential and business customers that to be clearly prescribed the time scale and certainty about whether the lease can be obtained makes it very difficult for the new entrants to the market services on the basis of unbalanced lease. And the last thing is the issue of capacity. In conclusion, the report covers issues of the technical aspects, addressing the technical rules that was presented. The report also covers the legal and regulatory settings, the processes that will require the regulator to put in place for the implementation process. And the report also touches slightly on the issues of economics of local use. However, they couldn't give proper economical information with regard to this report because they couldn't access confidential information with regard to submissions to the regulator because that is a highly confidential by the incumbent. So the members of the committee couldn't access that kind of information. So they did their own drawings based on the website. And the report also has a list of recommendations. In the recommendations that the report specifically specifies all the strategic issues that the regulator will need to put in place for the implementation process. And what is expected from the regulator before the implementation process of the LLU can be considered. It's quite cumbersome of the list of recommendations that have been attached in the report with regard to the regulation. But what the department did, we looked at the policy concerns on the implementation with regard to the LLU process. What we did when we published the policy directives, we identified one crucial aspect of the recommendation, which is the implementation period. To say the local loop and boundary should be implemented as soon as possible after the regulator has put the necessary measures in place, but it should be at the advanced stage by 2011, almost to completion by 2011, but not doing this out of context, looking into the best policy decisions that were taken in other countries and the time period that was done. I mean, other countries that started the implementation of the local loop 10 years ago, they haven't completed the process. It will depend on the complexity of the matter and the relationship that the regulator have in place between the incumbent and the regulator. But in the recommendation, what the report is also putting forward the topologies that they feel strongly that will be appropriate for a sufficient environment, but we don't necessarily have to have one topology that is implemented in South Africa. Based on the geographical settings and the needs of the market currently, the three topologies that we discussed are three models: the full unbundling, the line sharing, and the implemented on various levels on various geographical places, but that will depend on the needs of the customer referring to the new entrant. If a new entrant shows that they need a line sharing in something, but a big stream in Captain Park, that should be allowed so that they are not restricted to a particular topology, which may not work in other parts of the country. Taking into consideration that South Africa has got the back of a rural area that hasn't been taken care in terms of the incumbent infrastructure. So we need to have different models and see which one will be more feasible in various parts of the country. The last recommendation from the policy decision was to ensure that the guidelines are finalized by the regulator before the implementation of the local loop and banking process. Thank you.
Chairperson, yes, as you can see, it's a highly technical and complex process, and I do want to emphasize the process is not an event, and much depends on the work to be done by the regulator, much will depend also on the cooperation of the incumbent, as you can see, and both on international experience and best practice. As Masila indicated, the purpose of the study was actually to give the department a sense of what is involved and give us a sense of how do we, if a country deal with unbundling the local loop, and also to get a sense of how long it will take. Now, it was mentioned in other countries it took a long time, but I think we have the benefits of best practice in the world, and I think we can learn a lot from mistakes in other countries, and the idea, the committee recommended that a 4-year period was applicable, considering the local conditions and international best practice, that it is doable within 4 years. In fact, that we will have most of the work done in 4 years. The committee also feels that the first results we will be able to see within a year if everything goes well. In other words, we need not to wait for 4 years to see a benefit. A benefit will be able to be produced within the first year, and then of course up to the third, fourth or fifth year. So we would be happy to take questions if there are any.
Now, what are the things that the economy is finished? They finish their job now and they are disbanded. So, what is the situation? The hybrid model that my first question was in what sort of kind of market segment are you going to apply this topology? And also the availability is going to be to determine it was my kid. I think it was my kid who was kind of full of secondly, for us, the developing country, we still have infrastructure backlog. So, it therefore means that there's still a need for infrastructure rollout. What possible scenario will unfold in terms of the rollout of fiscal infrastructure in the context of implementation of local income management? Do you think that the telecom would respond or we have motivation to roll out infrastructure in those still underserved areas in the context of local unbundling process? The first point is what you spoke to, which is also linked to the first and the second question that was asked, the maintenance of infrastructure. My question would be what would be, you know, introduced as a measure to impel the incumbent to ensure that the reliable provision of service from the point of view of infrastructure maintenance, upgrading and so on. But the other question, Chair, it's new talent would come into the market, and by assumption would be that it would also roll out its own design infrastructure. What's the likely policy approach that could be adopted in relation to its own last mile? Will it also be subjected to local unbundling process as well? Or a special regime will apply to it? The last point really is about whether there's been any intention either between the department and telecom or between the team and telecom in terms of this particular process, and what are the initial responses that you get in relation to that? Thank you very much.
I have this model, what kind of markets would be applicable and would be responsible to identify those markets and which kind of population should be used in that part of the market. I guess it's very clear. But you must also understand that the purpose of the implementation of the local loop process depends on the needs of the customers, which are the the in the market. If the regulator for some reason will identify those markets, you say, for this part of the country will implement this kind of topology, and if she gives an instruction to the operator themselves, you find that other operators are not necessarily interested in that part of the market, interested in growing. They might be interested in that. So it should be upon the operators themselves to say, okay, these are the markets, but as new tech would prefer, or as Mutalo Telecom would prefer to only have life sharing in this part of the in this part of the country. So it should be left, the flexibility should be left with the new entrant to choose which part of the country will want each kind of infrastructure to access their own subscribers. But I guess the couple will then come up with a guidelines to say if you are to access the local loop for different topologies, these are the guidelines. They have various guidelines for various topologies, for various parts of the country. I guess it's quite some complicated and long process for the regulator. And then there was also a question on the MLU will ensure the infrastructure rollout in those areas. Yes. In terms of the experience from other countries, in areas where the incumbent feels that they don't have interest like we have in this country, Telkom has rejected other areas, although they still have the infrastructure in those areas. What the incumbent did, they decided to then sell that part of the infrastructure to interested parties to take part of money that local on behalf of the incumbent. But that would be an arrangement between the operator, the incumbent and the new entrant. Of course, being regulated. So any other process that falls under the local regulation process, the prices for access and prices to the infrastructure within the MDF has to be determined by the regulator. But you might still have some areas that still need infrastructure to build out there, which is the use of government, of course. Also, also have their own MDF to roll out infrastructure. We're adding lots of gold to that. So the maintenance of the infrastructure. The local loop is maintained by the incumbent because they are not transferring the infrastructure to other operators. It will remain Telkom's infrastructure. So Telkom will be obliged to maintain the infrastructure. And what they did in DT established a company to manage the infrastructure on behalf of the just to ensure that there's open access to all the operators who've got the necessary requirements to access the local loop. Then that company manages that infrastructure on behalf of the incumbent. Whoever access the infrastructure, they pay money to that company, and the maintenance are done by day-to-day maintenance of the local loop are done by that company. It will depend on various models that will be implemented in various parts of the company. Where there's school and banking, of course, then they'll have to have mechanisms come who will then manage the operations of the maintenance of the facility. But where there's line sharing and distribution, of course, it's obvious that the Telkom will do that. Can come in. Or the new solution. So the in terms of the license, I expect to roll out the infrastructure. I'm not well informed how far they are. But in terms of the ECA, because all the operators are completing their license, it will depend if Neotel will still have the infrastructure license. I'm not saying they didn't, that they'll still have it. Because when you convert it, you apply to the regulator and indicate the services that you want to provide, either the infrastructure or the communication services only. I think they'll opt for the infrastructure, network infrastructure license, of course they'll have their own last mile and it has to be accessed by other operators. Yes, the team was independent, so whoever the one who set up the team, they were allowed to go in. I know that they have meetings with Telkom, but what if this has not been successful on that part? They had to deal with the regulator, they had to deal with other operators of their own ship. Because we did not say money to the community. The community was independent. And they had the flexibility of voting whatever they were choosing. They had to
a diagram which just shows some physical certainly New Till doesn't say anything wants to do some writing on the Scopolis, but perhaps you could give us an insight. The big thing that has changed between now and when we did the last old telephone is wireless and wireless access. So not everybody will even want to write the Scopolis anymore. It is no longer as pretty an issue as it was. But it certainly remains very important. We had only really one question that arises here. And that is the recommendation that a new facilities and services management institute be formed by the incumbent on terms and conditions that we got. Now that's where it gets unending. And in real unbundling, as you decide by law or otherwise, that the dominant incumbent can no longer be vertically integrated, and you cut off the local loop, and you make new company called Loopco or whatever. And I remember in Britain, Ofcom made use quite frequently of the idea that it gives these things to play, to operate. It now mentioned the possibility, which it read into its own act, the UK Communications Act, that it would be possible for to cut off the loop. And I don't think that's quite how it plays out. You can even make an argument that RECA also makes such an interpretation process. Dominant incumbents will be difficult, you know, that's predictable. And now that's what I would really like to hear about, this recommendation about the new facilities and services management entity. Have you in mind what Ms. McClellan described a minute ago, the thing that we see is currently in development? Since you do hold 40% of Telcom, which government then as the shareholder sit down at board meeting and say, let's now make a new unit here, and then leave it to us, and if our customers might declare to them that the new unit doesn't give fair, non-discriminatory, highly cooperative access without elbow slippage and all the other typical problems that occur, that one might then look at a further possibility.
Okay. Thanks for that. I'm not sure where your point the recommendations in the here, we've got to have time to go through them. They are much more extensive than the summary that you're given. The general recommendations and the ones based on international best practice. I'm sure we will also have time to look into that. But Madam Smart is raising a very interesting question about Loopco as well. Can we hear some response from the issue?
I'm sure that
you want to say that to somebody. If you're not sure what to say, you can. Yeah.
What I'm presenting here is the report and the recommendation of the report. So as government, we haven't really made any decision with regard to the recommendations. So we're also citing the report, like the members are citing the report and see what can work best for the country. So, but of course, the issue is the second question.
What does Ms. Matlava think of the recommendations that
have been Yeah, but the one that I find is the Britain one, the similar one, where the loops are managed separately by the separate entity, which is also a good idea if we are going a route of full unbundling. In areas where we go through full unbundling, it should be a recommended model, I guess, an option, and it will be easy for the regulator to implement. But because there's this hybrid recommendation in other parts, we might be looking at the big screen, the topology, the line sharing, which is not necessarily requiring that look.
I'm just saying it's an interesting time. Scanning through the report, it looks like digital control has its own share of problems. So there are no easy answers. let's take the Mukhalaf again. The first girl, our daughter, but she can let me answer the two questions that she asked that she was born. So the issue of infrastructure rollout and also the given the backlogs that we have and also the issue of the last mile of North and really the subject.
Yes.
I haven't really had the latest and technical plan of the new cell on their wider side plan. I'm not sure if this is the side of their latest technical plan with regards to the rollout on the CDMA. If the entire country will be covered by the CDMA, if they could put any cell on the wider spectrum. I haven't had the side of their latest technical plan. The issue that the member of my raised with regards to cherry picking, with regards the role of infrastructure in the electric side of operation. I guess the implementation of the universal citizen access by the regulator will continue from the regulator side and both from policymakers. The implementation of local loop and binding process does not necessarily take away that responsibility from both of us to ensure that the country got the necessary infrastructure. So this will continue to be two separate problems. The unwinding of the local loop and also the infrastructure development, the policy issue in the department and also from the regulator side.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon and morning, Chambers. Well, I think we had a really animated discussion in the committee from the local government. Lots of interest in the ICT sector, and they think they're looking forward to many more briefings and a whole lot of things. On the question of the wireless, and yourself. I've had several meetings with the CEO and they have indicated to us that value of the local loop is important. They still want it, and I will explain why. They probably don't, I think it's a marketing thing not to make it look as if they are very dependent on it. But you see, if you look at the development of the sector, where the companies make money, it is in the business, you know, the connections to the offices. Because with the local loop, there's no differentiation between the connection to the house and the connection. So for the house, most probably the wireless will do. But for the businesses, especially where you have high traffic, and because this is where they call, that's what they really need, is actually to make money. That's why, in fact, they would come into the business in the first place and apply for a license that is a land base. So it is something that is important to them. It obviously will not halt them, but the sooner they have access to the local loop, the better. And it's slightly too expensive for them to be able to build. Because I did say earlier with the CEO, because right now the bulk of our network is covered. Why is it that they don't put fiber off? They don't send fiber to the office of the home. It's very expensive. So it's not something, especially when they are starting, that they will be able to do. So it is something that, you know, they have concerns, but it's something that they feel very much interested in. But it also means that they need to work on those things. And then all the other questions, I think I think for us, the critical thing about this is the main reason for the committee was to make sure that we try and bring what others have done in terms of time, because we felt that it was something that was really important for the practice. As you say, the sanctions are very ambitious. We don't let in ambition. We might have the skills and ability to do the thing. But, you know, we try, and we saw the business, they had not understood exactly what it involved. But
So we think that, even if it is not all of it, but we think that within these 4 years, we should be able to do the most crucial ones, especially the, you know, the business and so on, for access to the businesses. And I think that is where the real interest is. I have no doubt all newcomers charity, that's the only way they survive, the charities, and often if you allow them they will only stay in the charities and that's it. So that is charity is their biggest possibility in my survival, even the competition is there.
I'm just wondering what the attitude of the incumbent is, you know? Are they also resisting that happens internationally? Telkom, you're not allowed to speak, I'm just wondering. yeah. And secondly, the cards of readiness to tackle this problem as well, this challenge. I'm just raising the issues that we need to also consider as a commitment. I'm going to go to the other man, the policy direction. Are they policy directors or directors? They are both directions and directions. All directions. Okay. If you allow us, since time is not on our side, let's see how far we go. It's important just to go into the policy direction. I see you raised your hand, madam. Do you want to preempt the introduction of this? Okay. Let's give the department just to summarize the issues, and then we can take questions and discussion.
Thank you, sir. The presentation is with regard to policy, the proposed policy direction. That were published on the 25th of May 2007. Members will realize that the main proposed policy directions and decisions until they're finalized. Now they are being published for public comment by the minister on the 25th of May, as she has said to her budget speech. In the minister's speech of May 2006, she said to some intentions that she was going to publish policy directions and policy decisions with regard to various aspects that were in the budget speech. However, most of we realized that most of the issues that were in the minister's intention were based on the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which was then repealed when the minister's speech was in May and the ECA was promulgated in July. We then had some loopholes with regard to the national objective with regard to the proposed policy decisions and directions. Number one is the issue of universal service access. It will remain and continue to be the concern of the policy to ensure that the universal service and universal access money is something that is not ignored with the implementation of other policies. It has to be the key with regard to any policy that is promoted by the minister. And the second national objective was also to look at the efficient utilization of the spectrum, since it was various policy directions with regard to the spectrum, which are also referring to questions that are contained in the ECA. And our national objective is the infrastructure development and rollout that the member Michalak was referring to. The responsibility of the minister from time to time will continue to ensure that the infrastructure that we have is efficient, and where it's not efficient, there are plans to roll out the necessary infrastructure, either through licensing or through other policy directions that will be issued by the minister from time to time to the regulator. And another key initial objective from the policies that are being proposed is to ensure the international connectivity with regard to our existing operators and the other new entrants that will enter the market through the conversion of their licenses, and to make sure that those operators that were not able to provide broadband or have access, they didn't have access to the broadband infrastructure, they are allowed to do so through the regulations and policies that will be finalized. I'll quickly go through the issues that were announced by the minister in the budget speech of 1996, budget speech of 2006, and why they are not carried over. And number one was the bank issue with regard to self-provision. It was Section 40 of the Telecommunications Act, which we don't have in terms of the ETA. It was international gateway facility to be provided by the mobile operators. Currently, our mobile operators are not allowed to provide, self-provide with regard to international gateway, but it's not necessarily a license. Service that was part of the services that were provided either by KCM, it was not included in the list of services that were provided by the mobile operators. And with regard to the amendment of the promulgation of the ETA, we don't have a reference mobile operator. And then there's also the EMA that was also referred to in the minister's speech. Merely to address the issue of technology literacy, which was not included in the telecom act. The implementation of the ETA and the outstanding provisions that the regulators still struggle with the finalization of their conversion with regard to the implementation of the ETA. We still have the outstanding problem of the rent that was also part of the pronouncement of the minister's speech of 2006. How rent should be converted into the existing license and the mobile operators and the users. Those were the key issues that were identified as the regulator for conversion. Because then if they have to get the individual license, then the minister has to give considerations with regard to that. Section 5 of Section 6 gives the minister the power to issue considerations to the regulator with regard to individual electronic communication network license. Either for new licenses, it doesn't necessarily specify whether it's for new licenses or for existing licenses. So, by so doing, in the ETA and the pronouncement of the new, of the proposed considerations, we're trying to address the key outstanding policy issues for implementation by the regulator. The policies that we published in the various policy decisions and considerations. So under policy decisions, we had the following policies: statutory exclusivity provision and the statutory exclusivity provisions that are contained in the statutory agreement or arrangement that they currently in the incumbent operators in the world. In terms of In terms of ETA, ministers given the responsibility to determine the date for which the agreement and arrangement that the operators have entered into to become null and void. So we're addressing that particular outstanding policy for the implementation by the regulator with regard to the exigent provision that is currently in those arrangements. And the second policy decision is the provision of wireless broadband by centers to post offices, government offices, to some centers and other entities. What we did do is, I did this slide, but trying to summarize what is in the policy directive. We didn't go necessarily to all the policy directives the way they are drafted in the budget. That's true to me. dilemma, which each are the key policy decisions and each one are policy direction. The policy decision at the moment is to ensure that Centex is allowed to provide the broadband services to the current post offices and the government offices and the system centers. That's the policy decision. And the second one is to ensure that sub post offices are transformed into system post offices so that they can provide multimedia, various multimedia services. And there are even necessary exam or necessary assistance by the regulator if needs so when they get the application from the regulator. The next one is the mobile broadcasting services using the DVB-H handset. The policy decision is trying to address issues of open access and affordability. In this policy, we are saying any entity that has to provide the mobile broadcasting service infrastructure, but for the purposes of open access and affordability, should be prioritized by the regulator. However, other commercial operators can still be licensed if needed so, but the priority is to ensure that it's got a national infrastructure that is open access for other operators to be able to provide the DVB-H services. And it should be given, it should be prioritized in terms of spectrum allocation. These mobile broadcasting services are to be provided on a single network for the national coverage purposes by that entity that will be issued to that responsibility by the regulator. And then the policy, those were the policy decisions. The policy direction, so the regulator are as follows. The prioritization of prescribing use of essential facilities to ensure that subsidiary facilities are accessed immediately. Remember, I didn't discuss earlier on that the regulator already is given the responsibilities in 143 of the ECA. That's true. But the intention of the policy direction is to ensure that the implementation is prioritized by the regulator. It doesn't take 3 years. So we are aware of the question, but we're saying this part of the facilities need to be prioritized and the list has to be available as soon as possible. Okay. And the second one on the conversion of the other end licenses into individual electronic communication network services. It's mainly for the introduction of competition in the net, in the infrastructure sphere to ensure that the existing VEMS licenses that are having infrastructure, that infrastructure as the regulator is converting them to various kinds of services, they take into consideration that the infrastructure is going to be efficiently utilized. And it will serve the purpose of providing any infrastructure that will be provided by individual electronic communication network services. And we have outlined the some of the processes and aspects that the regulator can use into in conducting them to ensure that they're given individual electronic communication services. I also think members are aware that we currently have really more than 300 events. So it will be difficult to say all the events that they've got licenses should be converted into individual electronic communications licenses. The access to emergency communications services, the major objective of the policy direction is to ensure that users or subscribers, they have access to emergency services even if that the default in payment, like the mobile operators. We currently sitting in a position where if you default for the payment for the fixed line in the house, you cannot be able to access the emergency services. But with the mobile operators, we are able to access those services. So that was the intention of the policy direction. Second one is the allocation of spectrum for internal network, the internal network that we referred to under the policy decision was saying, if there's a single network, there's an operator that is going to be providing a single network for the initial coverage on the principle of open access, should be prioritized in terms of spectrum allocation by the regulator. Second one is with regard to the coordination between the radio frequency spectrum licenses. It is also there in, under the DCA, but there are no regulations in place to coordinate, to ensure that the coordination is in place. And policy intention is to cause the regulator to agency to spread those regulations that will govern the coordination as the frequency plan is being analyzed and is going to be implemented by the regulator. The next one is also to request the regulator to prioritize on the prescription procedure and criteria for awarding of the radio licenses for computing applications in the instances where there's insufficient spectrum. So it must not be necessarily first come, first served, but it must be based on computing. The next policy direction for the regulator is also under the conversion of the current user. We are all aware of the problems that are currently being faced by the user. But as a policy maker, we feel positive that the current under service areas are allowed to cover more scope in terms of their infrastructure, and also to be allowed to have equity that will be held by the investors to reduce burden from government in terms of funding, which will assist the country and the users themselves. So the proposal is that the current users should be allowed to cover provincial regions and also be allowed to have companies that will own a system of up to 49% in terms of investment and equity. And the last consideration for the regulator is with regard to the implementation of the LAE process, which we just discussed, and we are also trying to share our ambition with the regulator. To say yes, try and done within the 4 years.
Sure.
Yes. And those were the considerations and decisions in short. Okay. No. Okay. I'm sorry. The state policy direction was on a different slide. So I was going to insert it, but from the internship then. The last policy direction is with regard to WebSafe. The intention of that policy is to say to the regulator, they must investigate and see how the existing WebSafe infrastructure and services can continue to be utilized efficiently in the country. And if they come up with any possibility, then we'll have a look at the possibility and see how soon can that be implemented. Thank you.
Okay, so what did you ask?
One thing I wanted to ask about is, of course, the family travels on one of the essential facilities that the country has to declare and then deal with. But I just want to ask you the very first paragraph in the set of Gazette's decision. Says that the minister has decided to consult the relevant government with the SATCOM consortium, indicating 1st November this year as the date for which exclusivity will land. Now, as Ms. Mastala said earlier in her presentation, we certainly have one source in the ECA saying that suggesting the minister to consult is all we can do to encourage people. We can't expect people to resolve their contracts but it gave her a kind of an empowerment to go and talk to you. But the cable club, the Sat 3 cable club consists of Western European telcos, so not governments, doesn't it? So I'd just like you to hear, doesn't that exclusivity expire anyway under their contract this year? If so, when? When in 2007 does that exclusivity, specifically on our landing rights at Melkor, expire? And why is the date of November stipulated? And why should the minister consult with the government?
I'll try and answer that one, but yeah, giving also access to me. The issue of exclusivity has been engaging with Telkom on it, and trying to understand what is it that permission has, because it's a very complicated matter. The contract and arrangement probably will still remain, because that is a consortium arrangement. But what they are relating with regard to those arrangements is with regard to new proposals, who should be the new members who join the consortium. The consortium will continue to exist. They are not automatically disbanded by the end of this exclusivity period. So the line between the arrangements and the contracts and the exclusivity of landing stations is a complex matter. We've been trying to engage with Telkom on that issue. But the reason why we had this policy direction was that Minister will start engaging with other governments and see what is it that was done best in those countries. And what is it that you can say is the end of exclusivity in terms of the South African legislative context? Because obviously different countries are applying those clauses and arrangements differently. It's not a uniform arrangement.
But in our case, it means that all of them arrangements become null and void from the 1st of November, if that's a decision that the country takes.
That's the proposal that you have, and once we receive the public comments and minister receives a response from the country that she's consulting, I think we'll be in a position to make a proper decision. But it's the government that is the safest when we put it in the issue. Yeah, that's why then we have to go.
Yeah.
When you speak in official, they say we're recording. Unless it's on the record, then the papers will take it up.
Thanks, Chair. Another member will recall that this provision of putting the minister on a day to be determined by the minister is actually something that we had requested as a department, because we felt that we did not want to be like the US to regulate by South African law, to regulate other people by South African law. So putting in the minister help. But putting in the minister, the minister can't talk to companies, so that's not possible. So this is why the minister would talk to the government of the companies, whatever companies are in the consortium, she would talk to the government and then indicate to them, this is what our law says. Whatever we define as exclusivity in terms of constitutes to be null and void, so that's what the act says, that there will be null and void. It's the exclusivity provision. So, yes, she intends to pull it off. I think the extent, when we have a law, we try our best to implement the law. Minister has been given a date from which the arrangements are supposed to be null and void. The only thing for us here is the determination of what we need in terms of the objectives of the Act.
Why do we as South Africans think that should be exclusivity provisions? I think that is the only thing. That is going to come to an end. It's law. So ours is to implement the law, and so what is the request of the minister is to determine the date by which this happens. So we felt that because this things are diverted, we then work on them for a month. Giving about 6 months is reasonable to other countries, Spain. Well, this is what our law says. We intend to do that by this date, and then we will get the reaction from the countries. But I don't think the minister has an option not to implement the law, because that's what the law says. The law requires her to put the date by which the exclusivity provisions would be made null and void. Now, as Ms. Matala explained, different countries have actually treated this certificate differently. So we would have them in our context to say, to meet our own objectives, how do we need to tackle this? I think the one thing that this as government we are quite committed to is that we will never go through this kind of thing again in our country. We really would not, and this is why in terms of the engagement with the other people who are in this state, because for many reasons. But you know, I was just explaining the issue of the date and why it's consulting the government.
All countries struggle with their
tables in the front. Okay, let's take some of you read the last one. Is there anybody else? Because I think we have not provided for lunch.
An assistant, you know, for that. Some references here. The second paragraph, I think so, where you talk about choice of mentors, that is what we used to know as the multi-purpose community center. And in the subsequent paragraph, then there's reference to the post office that choose some. Can we clarify that point, especially from the point of view of authority, because now the emphasis is on another, the under the CIS. Does it mean that going to a post office would be the same as going to an NPCC? Is there going to be an integration of this network? Of the centers. And what is the difference between Chusong centers and Chusong post offices? The second really I did take note of the issue of the measure of users. Ultimately, how many users are we going to have as soon as you manage them? And I suppose if they've got like a 1,000 wide coverage, they will still operate in those areas that necessarily are not under. And what implications are there for them? In terms of preferential both policy and regulation framework, which comes with that data, because they will be playing the same space as the other operators. My biggest and major concern is that, you know, we've just been dealing with the local economy. And this policy directives, all of which are dependent on, you know, the regulator's capacity, you know, to basically do what the director from the policy point. That's one part of the concern, but the second part of the concern is that also in the context of the ECA, there are certain processes which the cancer has got to put in place. For instance, issues of licensing conversion, you know, and our timelines and all of that. And all of these things have their own, you know, deadlines, issues of digital migration and everything else. My major concern is the issue of capacity within the region. Are we satisfied that all these things that are prescribed to the CASA to do, it will be able to do that? And whether the, from the point of view of resources, have we costed some of these possibilities? From a budget perspective, what will it take, you know, for CASA to implement all of this? Because we'll come back here next time and speak ourselves and so on, without any significant movement, for as long as we don't attend to the issue of both capacity from the point of view of human resource and also the critical resource that is necessary for to implement all of this, and in addition to some of the areas that are affecting the industry.
Let me start with the issue of the Tucson centers and the Tucson hospitals. Now that they, as we indicate, the Tucson centers are actually what you could call multi-urban community centers, which are coordinated by the GPIS, but there are several departments that participate in them. We are one of the several IT departments because of the connectivity that is required. I think it was in the State of the Nation address during this year where the president talked about the connectivity of the entities because they exist often. They are put in a place that is fed into the center of the food. So we can look at how the things are done. But there are several challenges that relate to the entities as they said. But one of the key issues is their connectivity. And we have been mandated to ensure that the centers are connected and the different government departments that are in the center are also connected to each other. So sometimes some of them you'll find that grant goes for so they fall under the Ministry of Finance. So they have computers and all of those kinds of things and other departments don't have and so on. So it is that coordination within the center and then of the connectivity. But when this issue of the connectivity of the center has changed, what we felt was that if the NCCC can go to the place or the people can go to the place where it will receive the government services, particularly for people who are in the outlying rural areas, if they depend on this, then the best thing to do is to actually use an infrastructure that already exists and only expand that to ensure that that infrastructure actually provides the services that the people centers actually provide. So it is in these discussions, we have discussions with the CCIS as well, where the last year we had one of the listeners that she said that the post office is going to be the core ICT public access infrastructure for the public. So to add to that ICT public access, we're then saying it will be the core place for access to government services. So what this means is really the transformation now of the post office in the Tucson centers. A lot of work has been done, the architectural work has been done, the staff is actually working on this panel. And this is why you are having lots of different government departments now, social development, CI and so on, who are entering into the arrangement with regards to use for the post office for this. So this is really what it means. For us, the importance of the directive is that from a funding perspective, especially for SAPO, it then makes it easier to transform those processes because it means building another room or two quite apart from the connectivity to ensure that the different government departments will then be located there. But we have to put in the connectivity of existing system centers where we do not have post offices. So, yes, you will find actually the post office will be better because in addition to the different services, you also get postal services and other services that the post office provides, such as pensions and those kinds of things. But it is really that in that context of looking at the post office now as a center for where you receive the government services in a quick manner. I would ask you to deal with the question of the legal check. But on the issue of the capacity of the regulator, we don't have capacity with the DNC, may I say. And really, may I also say that, you know, these committees that have been working on the policy directives of digital migration, so on, they leave the office at the end of the day. So it's not as if there's an abundance of capacity somewhere and then of capacity elsewhere. And so we appreciate the pressure that is put on ICASA. But remember that we have a pressure to reduce the cost of communication, ensure that communication is everywhere. So in all of this balancing, the issue of capacity is a big issue, because almost everything that we have to deal with is urgent. We have had quite a number of discussions. Like I can just say, before we had an extensive meeting. We got the financial minister, we had an extensive meeting with the councillor as well. We went through some of these things with the education, and we have said to each other that there are certain things that, just with regard to the capacity of the regulator for the long term, that they require. But we feel that over and above that, they should also give us what additional capacity they would need for a short period. Because some of the things that we have now will not be, you know, for those. So they are working on that. But in addition to the rewards for people that, we are not happy with the amount and level of participation because it is national level. And mainly it's because of budget and capacity things. But you see, if we sit here in a cocoon and drag it, and things are happening internationally that then have an impact on us, and they are unable to make an input there, but also to learn from there. So we've also said that they would need to give us also with respect to that international participation, what are the requirements. So we do agree with you, we promise to think that that's really the priority. But I do want to say that we say the same thing in the department as well. It's complex, but we will try to do some of that.
Thank you, Kevin. The person, with regard to the numbers, how many will we have? If all the consultants are merged into provincial operators, there are seven provinces that have been identified to be issued with the previous visa. Northern Cape and Western Cape, they did not form part of the visa process because of the methodology that was used to determine the credit system. So we'll have six. We'll have six tutanos, but in Gauteng we've got one user in the Western district. So because that was the only area that was identified as less than 5%, so it means it will remain the only one that will operate in Gauteng. But in other provinces we'll have six. In the council, all in all, we have 7%, because then they will all be met in all the provinces. Each province will have 1%.
Thank you. There's one very small thing which I think is critical. On the issue of what constitutes an underserved area. And I'm raising this because it's not entirely the issue. When the issue of the underserved area was talked about then, you know, the use of the city, we were talking about deadline connectivity. There is a big debate today in court about what is an underserved area. And we just wanted to highlight this because we think that the use of the term, even in this context, would need to really be looked at in the context at the time when that case was established and the context that we're talking about today, and which is the criteria that we use for when, because otherwise the competition gets huge in the country as a result.
Okay, it's a work in progress. We must thank your patience and our guests. The meeting is adjourned. Did you?
Yeah.